right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And, folks, we have a very, very special treat tonight, and that is my guest, Command Sergeant Major Robert O'Dean. Now, I think everybody in this genre knows Robert Dean. He is a retired Command Sergeant Major. He spent 28 years in the U.S. military, had the highest security clearance NATO has, and for more than two decades now, he has been very public about the reality of UFOs and the reality of extraterrestrials. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show Command Sergeant Major Robert O'Dean. Welcome back.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Robert, some little time ago, we actually almost lost you, didn't we? I mean, recently, not too long ago, you were in the hospital and you were very, very ill, right?
Well, Kevin, I got hit by a ton of bricks about last October, actually. Well, I've been speaking at a conference that Kerry Cassidy had put on in Irvine, California, the Awake and Aware conference.
Uh-huh.
That was in September of last year, on the 25th. 10 days later, I found myself in an intensive care unit in Phoenix Hospital in a coma. And apparently, I had come down with viral meningitis. And I was at death's door for about a week or so, apparently. And I was in the hospital for a total of 6 weeks, and they pulled me through, and I'm here as ornery as ever. And apparently, the guys on the other side didn't want me to come home just yet.
Maybe on the other side, they were saying, oh, my goodness, Robert Dean, you know, he's going to be making speeches and telling us all kinds of stuff. We don't want Robert Dean. You think?
Well, I don't know that I'm known that well. You know, a couple of people told me I was famous, and I said, no, I think probably I'm more infamous than anything else. Kevin, I've been jabbering away for over 21 years on this subject of mine that I consider the most important issue in human history. And simply, it's fact that the human race on planet Earth is not alone, and we've never been alone. And on top of that, we've had an intimate interrelationship with non-human intelligence from the beginning of human history. Now, damn it, that's a story that's got to be told, Kevin.
Yes.
And there are aspects of our government, and I say parts of our government, that know the whole story, but nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, you know, recently...
It all comes out that there will be... society will be shaken up so badly that there will be chaos in the streets and all of that. And that's a lot of BS. I don't believe any of that. You know, I think the people are capable of dealing with this. And all they have to be done is told the truth. But that's something our government seems to have a real problem with.
Well, Robert, let me ask you a question now. Recently, Colonel John Alexander has been saying that there is no cover-up, there never has been a cover-up, and if there was a cover-up, he would have been able to find it, and he wasn't able to find it. And now he has asked for amnesty for anyone who in the military who has had a UFO or extraterrestrial experience to come forward and talk about it and have complete amnesty. What do you make of his statements that there is no cover-up and never has been?
Kevin, I know John. I know him well. I've known him for a number of years. And I know that he used to work for the Central Intelligence Agency. He at one time was part of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And a lot of the stuff that John talks about, I would take it with a little dose of salt if I were you. Because John has an agenda, and he's still, I think, playing the party line. He's not about to bring out the truth of what he really knows, Kevin. And I talked to him about this, and he gives me a big grin, and, you know, I know that he knows a hell of a lot more than he's ever said. But damn it, Kevin, there is a cover-up, and anybody that does their homework, it looks at the evidence and studies the data, know that we're having a cover-up on this issue. Anybody who's read the Brookings report, for God's sake, knows that that's become government policy since 1961. And no, there is a cover-up, Kevin, and damn it, it's a big cover-up. It's probably the biggest cover-up in history. The American people are not being told the truth of who they are, what they are, how they came to be here. And one of the big secrets of all, Kevin, is the fact that we've got alien technology. We've had it since 1954.
When you say we have alien technology...
who rattled the cage and rocked the boat because he's living on a pension, as I am, and he doesn't want to stir up in any of the muddy waters. But, Kevin, I've reached a point in my life. I'm 83 now, and I'm so ornery, and I'm saying, look, you American people, wake up. You're being lied to. You've been lied to for 50 years, and it's time for the truth to be told.
Well, okay, now let me ask you something. You said he's living on a pension, as you are. He doesn't want to muddy the waters. But it hasn't disturbed your pension, has it?
Listen, John, or listen, Kevin, I've got to put you on hold for just a second. I have to put a hearing aid in my ear because you're coming through very faint.
Okay, fair enough.
I can barely hear you, and I've got to put a hearing aid in my ear. Maybe it'll make it a little better.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, folks, we will continue with Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean in just a moment. He's got a little technical issue that he's going to deal with, and then he'll be right.
Let's try it now and see if it's any better.
All right, can you hear me better now?
Oh, much better, thank you.
Okay.
I have hearing aids in both ears, but I had taken one out to be on the phone with you, but I found that you were coming through so faintly that I really couldn't hear you.
Okay, now, you mentioned that Colonel Alexander is on a pension, and he doesn't want to muddy the waters, but you're on a pension as well, former government employee, former military. It hasn't caused you any problems with your pension, has it, for you to be out speaking about this?
Yes, Kevin, it has. When I first came out and started speaking publicly on this subject in 1991, I was part of a world conference that my friend Wendell Stevens put on in Tucson, Arizona. And I've been speaking publicly about this, and when I first became come out of the closet, as it were, figure of speech, as you know,
mm-hmm.
I went through a whole lot of harassment. Oh, yeah. They subtly tried to shut me up. I used to get phone calls in the middle of the night, 2 and 3 in the morning. So help me, I had black helicopters hovering over my house, and I was being shadowed and followed by black SUVs with tinted windows, and that went on for 6 months, almost to a year. And I was on the phone with Wendell Stevens one evening, and he's a good friend of mine. He's a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel who has been speaking publicly on this issue for many years. And I was on the phone with Wendell, and I said, you know, I'm just about fed up with this. I mean, the black helicopters over my house, hovering 150, 200 feet above my house. They're shadowing me in black SUVs. They call me at 2 and 3 in the morning and harass me. I says, Wendell, I'm just about to the end of my rope here, because I said, you know, I work in the sheriff's department. I carry a gun. And I suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome from two wars. And I says, I just might lose it one night and pull out my gun and start shooting people. And I says, that would be terrible. I don't want to kill anybody. Do it. Nobody could ever prosecute me because, you know, here I am, a veteran of two wars with post-traumatic stress disorder. They'd never prosecute me. They'd probably put me in the hospital for a couple of weeks, but that wouldn't be about it. So help me, Kevin. Everything stopped. The phone call stopped. The black helicopter stopped flying. The black SUV stopped shadowing me. And So help me, they must have been monitoring my phone call with Wendell Stevens when I was sure they were, which is why I said what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that harassment stopped. Now, about 2 years later, they tried to take half my pension away. They came up with some funny off-the-wall kind of thing that, you know, I had been paid too much, and they were going to have to take the money back, and my pension would be cut in half and all that. And I said, no way. And I got a hold of a couple of good friends of mine. My son was a career naval officer who was assigned at the Pentagon at the time. Got a couple of retired admirals who my son knew, who looked into the matter, and my retirement pay was restored. But they've tried to harass me over the years, and I think, Kevin, that they finally gave up on me. They figured that I was an ornery old cuss, and I wasn't worth the effort, and so they left me alone. And I found from a couple of friends in Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, that I went from being a nuisance to a threat. And now, Kevin, apparently they look upon me as a bit of a asset.
Now you, my, how times change.
Apparently they've gone from nuisance to a threat to now I'm an asset.
Well,
so somebody, somewhere, I don't know where, Kevin, you know, at what level of government it is, somebody's decided to leave the old coot alone and let him jabber away because nobody's going to pay attention to him anyhow.
Well, you know, almost since day one of this show, I've been harassed. It still happens once in a while, but not as often as it used to. And, you know, I even went through, Robert, there in Phoenix where we had helicopters over the studio as I would do the show. Electricity would go off just on my side of the block right at showtime and then come on right at time for the show to be over. And, you know, so we'd have no electricity during the show, couldn't broadcast, and that would happen every once in a while. Phones tapped, all kinds of stuff, but they've pretty much...
But they're really not that damn clever.
Do what?
They think they're clever, but they're really not.
Well, no, especially since I talk about them publicly.
It's almost a joke after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I've said is, when they start messing with us on the air, I talk to them on the air, and I say, thank you, I appreciate you guys doing that, you morons. Don't you know that by doing what you just did, you put yellow highlighter over everything my guest just said, and now people are really paying attention to the guest? Thank you, I appreciate
it. You're an example of a voice of truth that's come out, and... they worry about you because you're talking about truths that they don't want the average person to even know about. George Noory, for example, on Coast to Coast is doing basically the same thing you are. He's telling some truths that nobody wants to be told. Listen, my friend, let me tell you something. I've been around this world for 83 years now, almost. Well, actually, I am 83. I turned 83 in March. And I've learned that you and I and Nori and all of the rest of them that are trying to tell the truth, we're the good guys, and we're going to win this damn battle one way or another. We're going to come out on top, Kevin, so don't you ever doubt that for a minute.
Well, I don't doubt that truth is going to win, ultimately. I don't doubt that at all. You know, the only thing you have to... It's kind of like a pine tree. You see pine trees out on the mountain. They're all green and everything looks wonderful, and they're very, very fragrant. And just looks great. And then the wintertime comes, and heavy snows fall, and everywhere around it's frozen and cold, and everything else just retreats. And it looks like, you know, I mean, the snow just takes over. But in the springtime, you see who wins. In the springtime, the tree that's still standing is one that won. And the snow lost.
There you go.
So all you got to do is still be standing. And when the snow thaws...
You got it, Kevin. We're going to be standing when this is over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is one of the things that I think perhaps they have learned is it's... they've been doing this kind of stuff to me now for 12 years, and I mean, they need to get a clue. I won. You know?
Kevin, you know, I can understand to a certain point why they're scared to death about this. I've read the Brookings report, and I suspect you have too.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes.
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, Kevin.
All right.
Okay, are we back?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read the Brookings report. Are you there?
I'm here, Kevin. Barely hear you, but I'm here.
Yeah, I said, yes, I have read the Brookings report.
Well, you see, that became national policy in 61. And they're scared to death. They frankly have convinced themselves that the average American is simply incapable or unprepared to deal with this reality. And I'll be honest with you, Kevin, to a certain point, I kind of understand that. Because when things begin happening to me, and I think you may know a little bit about some of that, I've had some face-to-face meetings with some of the guys from out there. And I've been aboard their ships, Kevin, and honest to God, I really have. And when we start addressing the real truth, the big truth of this issue, and you realize that the human race is a hybrid race, and we have had our genome manipulated for centuries, well, millennium, it's a hell of a story, and it's going to have an impact on not only on society, but it's going to have an impact on religions. It's going to have a tremendous economic impact when it all comes out. And to a certain degree, I can almost understand why they're scared, because if it all comes out... A good friend of mine is a young man named Richard Dolan, who's written a beautiful book called After Disclosure. And Richard has talked about the impact of disclosure and what it would mean. And he hits it right on. It's going to change the world, Kevin. When the reality comes out that we are a hybrid race, we've had an intimate interrelationship with advanced non-human intelligence from the beginning of our history. And we're dealing with every aspect of human history. That's going to shake the world up, my boy. It's going to shake the world up tremendously.
All right. You are right, but we have to step away for a break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean. We'll be back right after this, I guess, this evening. Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean. And let me just make sure, are you still with us, Robert?
I'm right here, Kevin. Thank you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, that you have had face-to-face meetings with extraterrestrials. Would you share one of those accounts with us, one of those stories?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you something. Kevin, I'm not unique. I'm not one of a kind. I'm one of thousands, if not millions, of people on this planet who have had face-to-face confrontations. And I happen to know that a number of top military people, and I know of a three-star admiral, for example, a vice admiral who's had face-to-face meetings with them. And I keep thinking that, as a retired command sergeant major, if I open my big yap and come out and have the courage to at least talk about it honestly, that a few other people might do the same. Because there are literally millions of us, Kevin, who've had... confrontations with them and relationships of one kind or another. And I keep thinking that in time that a few others like myself will come forward and speak about it. But yeah, I've had face-to-face. I've had them visit me in my office. I've had them come up to me at a conference after I spoke at a conference some years ago. And it was at Lachlan, Nevada. I was speaking at the big UFO conference that Bob Brown used to put on up there.
Mm-hmm.
And after I had made my presentation, I came out into the lobby and to get a cup of coffee and mingle with the crowd. And this gentleman and this lovely lady came over to me, and they looked just like a, you know, typical guy, a husband and wife. I figured that that's who they were. And he walked over and he extended his hand and he said, "Listen, I want to thank you for what you had to say. I was fascinated by your information. And I just wanted you to know that I appreciate that." And I said, "Well, thank you. That means a great deal to me." And I had the strangest feeling, Kevin. I couldn't quite describe it. It was kind of a gut feeling, an intuitive sense. And I chatted with him for a few minutes, and I looked him in the face, and I said, "You're not from here, are you?" And I felt a little embarrassed at the time because I thought, wait, I said, "Excuse me, I don't mean Miami, New York, or San Diego, or wherever. But you're not from here, are you?" And at that moment, this lovely lady stepped forward and looked me straight in the eye, and she said, and with a big smile, "No, we're not from here." And that kind of took me, you know, and I said, "Would you mind telling me where you're from?" And she says, "If I were to tell you where we're from, you wouldn't understand." And I thought, oh my God. And the gut feeling I had at the time, Kevin, that she was trying to describe that they had not come necessarily from another planet, but they probably had stepped through a portal from another dimension. And we chatted for a while, and it was very pleasant and very relaxed, and I looked into their eyes, and that's when it dawned on me that these people were not entirely human. They were human, but they were beyond that. You know, we humans are what we call ourselves, Homo sapiens, sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
We're hybrids. But I've come to the conclusion that there are hybrid hybrids in our midst, Kevin. And they look just like us, and they behave just like us, and they can get away with it, but if you get close to them and you get a chance to look into their eyes, the best example I can give you is what Ingo Swann said a few years ago. Ingo says that you develop your intuitive awareness to a point that when you run into an extraterrestrial or multidimensional being, you feel it in your gut. You have an intuitive awareness that they're not from here. And Ingo was right. That's exactly what happened to me there at that conference in Laughlin, Nevada.
When you looked
I've met them several times, and as I said, Kevin, I, honest to God, have been aboard their ships. They have taken me aboard their ships.
When you looked into their eyes, what did you see that was different?
I consider it that it's more of an invitation. I've been invited, literally.
Okay, when you looked into their eyes...
Kevin, they conduct a physical exam. They've done that many times.
Mm-hmm.
And other times I just had some pleasant conversations with them and some chats with them. And let me tell you, my friend, that kind of shakes you up a little bit until you get used to it.
All right, Bob, when you say when you looked into their eyes, you knew they were not from here. Were their eyes different, or is it just a vibe that you got?
Well, it's a combination of it's a sensory thing. I developed my intuition over the years, and I think it's probably the one reason I've been kept alive. But I have a highly developed intuitive sense, and if you look into the eyes of one of these guys, you see an intensity there that you never see when you look into the eyes of a normal human being. Kevin, you know that we humans don't normally look each other directly into the eyes.
That's true.
Apparently it's an old, ancient, you know, primeval idea that it's a threat if you look someone directly in the eye. But with them, you look them in the eye and you see an intensity there that is beyond human. Oh, my God, it's almost impossible to find words to describe it, Kevin. And I will tell you that some of these people are not only 100,000 years ahead of us in evolution, but some of them are probably a million years. Maybe I'm being even modest there. Some of these guys are from other places, other times, and they are beyond human, Kevin. And apparently they have a program, and they're trying desperately to help us make this transition. They've explained that to me, that the human race is undergoing a very, very painful transition. We're going through adolescence, Kevin, and we're going through the period of growing up into adulthood. And it's a painful process. But we're apparently being given assistance, we're given guidance, we're being encouraged, and we're going to make that process. We're going to make that transition. And I've said this a million times, that the human race is literally undergoing a transcendent transformation into a new species. 100 years from now, our ancestors, our descendants, our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, are going off to the stars, Kevin. And that's our destiny, and that's our right. We'll take our rightful place out there. And that's why I feel so comfortable about my relationship with them, is they've done nothing but give me encouragement and hope.
When you look at the world around you, and you see not only just a widespread abject stupidity, but you see the results of it, all the wars, all the hatred, all the killing, how can you have hope?
Well, it's not easy to have hope. As I said, I've developed my intuition. I not only talk to them face to face, but I have a lot of I've been doing a lot of remote viewing, Kevin. Since I've been retired and living here quietly in Phoenix, I've been doing some very serious remote viewing. And let me tell you something, my friend. When you extend your consciousness out into the universe, you realize that, you know, our life here on this little planet, our short 60, 80, or 90 years, whatever, is so transitory, so brief, that the universe is so vast and so infinite and filled with so much intelligence in life that it helps you develop a sense of humility about human beings. And yes, we are a savage and primitive race, and yes, we're warring against each other. But slowly, convinced that the human race is going to make this transition. And I've been told and encouraged by some of the friends I've met from out there that really we're going to make it. And that's the thing that I think is the most important thing of all. There is a future for the human race, Kevin. They've shown me the future, and it's absolutely glorious.
Well, that is some good news. One of the things, I have a number of, you know, Bob, you've been on this show before, and I have met you a couple of times face to face, and but you know enough about me to know I don't do this show with an agenda. I'm not pushing an agenda. And so we have guests that have all different kinds of views here, and we have guests that come on and talk about how, you know, the sky is falling and the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and it's almost over, and you know, so we do have guests that talk about that. I let them say what they're going to say. I ask them questions about it and ask how they know this, and you know, I think people need to hear what everybody is saying. But one of the things that I say all the time is, it ain't over, and it's not going to be over anytime soon. And, you know, the cataclysms, yes, we're having them now. We had them when I was 4. And we're going to have cataclysms, you know, when my great-grandkids become grandparents. There will be cataclysms. So yes, that much is true. There will be catastrophes and cataclysms that goes with living on this planet, but it's not over, and we're going to survive all this.
Oh, I've been told very flatly that there is a future for the human race.
Well,
and that's one of the things I wanted to stress. You know, one of the things that I keep harping about again and again, I'm so fed up with these doomsday sayers. These people who continually, 2012, we're all doomed, it's the end of the world and all that garbage. Kevin, I've talked to some Mayan shamans. I've been in Mexico. I spoke at a conference there a year or so ago. And I've met some Mayan shamans, and they came up to me and he said, you know, this one old fellow says, you know, you white skins do it all the time. You screw things up. He said, our calendar doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Our calendar means it's the end of a cycle, and we're going to start a new cycle. And he says, we're feeling very positive about it. We're looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, frankly, we expect to see the nine great gods return. Well, now, I'm not that familiar with the Mayan history and theology, but apparently in Mayan tradition, their calendar and their religious books state that at this particular time in history, in 2012, that some of the great gods are going to come back. And I found that fascinating. You know, they look at the Quetzalcoatl is going to be coming back again. The feathered serpent, we're mm-hmm. looking forward to seeing him again. Now, you know, in the tradition of the Mayan history, Quetzalcoatl was tall, bearded, and fair.
Yeah.
And this old shaman says they're looking forward to seeing him again. And I said, well, I'll look forward to seeing him myself.
Yeah, I don't think that 2012 is the end of the road for the human race. Now, I will say, I think it could be the end of the road for some of this old paradigm. I think that that may be dying out. But not the rest of us. As we went away for break, Bob, I was saying, now I think 2012 is a pivotal year for the power paradigm. And, you know, I think they're losing their grip. And I think they're going to squeeze tighter and tighter and tighter. But it's going to be like squeezing a tube of toothpaste. You squeeze that tube of toothpaste tight enough and it'll burst. And everything in the tube will squeeze out between your fingers. That's what's happening to them. Are you still with us, Bob?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we hear you.
I think the old paradigm is a house of cards, Kevin, and you're right. It's going to come crashing down. And they've tried to desperately hold it together. And, you know, they manipulate the money and they manipulate everything, literally. But they're losing it, because, and they know they're losing it, and that makes them kind of frightened and makes them kind of mean.
Mm-hmm.
They'd rather hold on to what they've got than to let it change. But it's going to change whether they like it or not.
Well, you know, I think it's already, the change is already happening, and it's already in gear. And, you know, the train is very slowly leaving, beginning to move. It's leaving the station. And they're doing everything they can to keep people from getting on the train, doing everything they can to hold the train from moving. But the train is going to move, and it's going to pick up steam. It's going to pick up speed. And they're going to be left standing at the dock. Well, not the dock. They're going to be left standing beside the track. Because, you know, more and more and more people worldwide are looking at the old paradigm as irrelevant to them. And, you know, relevancy, once anyone loses relevancy to any situation, they no longer have any influence on that situation.
Well, Kevin, you're right. The point is, I've been following closely the ongoing scandal in the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a heartbreaking thing. I mean, my God, they're apparently having knockdown, drag-out brawls themselves within the within the Vatican itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they recognize that time is running out on them, and they're going to have to get their act together. And this scandal, this worldwide scandal of abusing children, for example, that has shaken them to their very foundations, and they've been spending millions, if not billions, of dollars to cover it up. But just looking at the Vatican as one of the centerpieces of one of the worldwide religions, you're looking at a change of a paradigm that nothing will quite ever be the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're watching it happen. You know, now people who have anchored themselves to the old paradigm are watching, and they are feeling that their world is crumbling. But the world is not crumbling, and I think this is an exciting time to be alive. It's a crazy time. I think the inmates have taken over the asylum, but it's the old paradigm is crumbling, and they're going to shake their fist and rattle their swords, and they're going to make sure that everybody knows they're still the bad boy on the block. But it's just irrelevant.
Let me tell you one of the major changes that's going to take place very soon.
Okay.
They've been sitting on top of it. They've been covering it up. They've been keeping it close to them. But we've had anti-gravity, and we have zero-point energy for 40 years, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily in the power of our government. It's in the power of private enterprise. It's in the power of private corporations. We've had experts before they died on their deathbed confessions, said, we've had anti-gravity and we've had zero-point energy for over 40 years. And when that comes out, that's going to bring the oil industry to its knees. And just think, my boy, what that's going to mean for in the world economy. Because it's going to come out eventually. It's going to have to come out because, as I jokingly said, and no pun intended, we do indeed have good friends in high places, and this reality of energy and the problems that we've been supposedly facing with oil and natural gas and atomic energy, all of that's going to come down to its knees because we're going to have zero-point energy and we're going to have anti-gravity flight, and that's coming out whether they want it to come out or not. And they know that, and they're scared to death, Kevin.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Let me tell you what Volkswagen has done. Somebody sent me a link to this video. It's on YouTube. And it's a new vehicle. It's not a car. Has no wheels at all. And this particular model seats two people. And they get in it and they turn it on. And then it just hovers. And they show it being driven through the city. And, but this is a Volkswagen vehicle that was dreamed up, I believe, by a Chinese girl, a young lady in China. And it does not use gasoline. It is all electric. And it's clean. And how it works, I'm not sure. I'm sorry?
I just stopped to think, my friend, what that's going to mean to the world economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When this information, I'm not familiar with this particular case that you mentioned, but I'm not at all surprised.
Mm-hmm.
We've had scientists here in our own country who've come up with anti-gravity. And David Froning, who's one of our top astrophysicists and aerospace engineers, who's now living in Australia, and I think he's living, interestingly enough, somewhere near Pine Gap, which is the location of one of the major ET facilities on the planet. And David Froning told me at a conference in Tucson in 1993, He said, we've had anti-gravity and we've had zero-point energy for 40 years, for God's sake. So it's coming out, Kevin. It's coming out, whether we like it or not. And it's going to be a bumpy ride, I'm afraid, because economically it's going to shake things up. But the truth will out. That's the point that these guys just don't grasp. They're desperately trying to hold on to the old paradigm, and they're not going to be able to do it. Kevin, they're going to lose it.
Well, and so many people are just...
scares the hell out of them.
So many people are economically tied to the old paradigm. And it'll be especially tough on people that are economically anchored into the old paradigm. It's going to be a bumpy ride for them economically. But to the degree that a person can live unplugged from that, then they will not have as bumpy a ride.
Just stop for a moment, my friend, and think what some of this new information is going to mean to the stock market. Gosh.
Yeah.
You think the stock market crashed in 2008?
Yeah.
I'm afraid you ain't seen nothing yet.
Because
this new knowledge, this new awareness, this new paradigm is really going to change the world completely.
Well, it is.
And I feel hopeful about it. And I've been told by my friends from out there that we do have a future. The human race has a beautiful future.
Well, I think that's the truth.
I'm encouraged by that.
I think that's the truth, and I think there's evidence for it. But, you know, one of the things I thought about when I saw these people get in to that Volkswagen, which doesn't look like a car at all, it looks like a plastic bubble. They got in and they turned it on, and the thing hovered above the ground. It doesn't use fans. It doesn't use jets. It doesn't use any type of combustible fuel. And I thought, yeah, this is pretty cool. But if it were not a car company doing this, if it were not an automobile company doing this, then it would never, ever see the light of day. It has to be one of big auto companies to do it.
Well, Kevin, they're going to be letting little bits and pieces of this information out over the years. I mean, this Volkswagen car, the vehicle that you're describing, is just probably the first step. You're going to see more and more and more of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have to step away for a break. Robert... what is the biggest change that you think is coming to us as humans?
Well, Kevin, I've been giving that a lot of thought over the years. My conclusion is simply this, that this realization, coming to terms with the fact that the human race on planet Earth is not alone, we've never been alone, we've had an intimate interrelationship with non-human intelligence from the beginning of our history. That realization, Kevin, in my view, will bring about an expansion of consciousness in the human species. It'll expand our awareness of ourselves, not only who we are, what we are, how we came to be, but it'll give us some indication of where we're going, where our future lies. I believe that bringing this truth out, as disruptive as it might be, and as shocking as it might be to some people, that it will indeed bring about an expansion of human consciousness, which I think will help lead to our survival as a species. We can't continue, Kevin. We can't continue in the old paradigm. We can't continue waging war on each other. We can't continue dealing with starvation in a world filled with plenty. We can't deal with the fact that we wonder what those little lights in the sky at night are. Once we come to terms with the reality of what they are, who they are, and how they relate to us, that in itself will bring about a tremendous expansion of human consciousness. And we're facing what the whole Copernicus faced back centuries ago, when they realized that the sun was the center of the solar system. That's going to be a Copernican change. It's going to be even more than that. The reality of who we are, how we came to be, is going to affect every major religion on the planet. It's going to affect society at large. It's going to affect the world economy tremendously. Initially, it will be kind of disastrous, but we'll come through it already, or all right. But I'm hopeful about it. I've been told by some of my friends from out there that there's nothing to be afraid of. All we have, you know, I go back to old FDR years ago. He said, the only thing you have to fear is fear.
Yeah.
And if we stop being afraid, for God's sake, we might realize that human beings are kind of special.
Do you think that this shift in consciousness...
When I was with them, they said that the human race is a very rare and special genome, that we're unique. And if we could come to terms with that ourselves and realize that we are special, the human race, it doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what church you go to. It doesn't matter what political party you belong to. It doesn't matter what language you speak. Every human being on this planet is a child of God, Kevin. And once we realize and come to terms with that, you know, I'm not a Christian, and I was brought up in the Christian faith, but a beautiful Jewish rabbi 2,000 years ago laid it out pretty bluntly. And we've never quite come to terms with what he had to say.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this shift in consciousness has already started, Robert? Robert, do you think this shift in consciousness has already begun? Do you think this shift in consciousness has already begun?
Oh, the expansion of consciousness has already been underway for some years. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You look around you and you see lots of people, you know, all over the place. I mean, the Arab Spring is an example, for example, of people in that part of the world that are beginning to wake up and pay attention. You know, I think the World Wide Web has had a big hand in that. I find it amusing, Kevin, frankly, I find it rather hilarious that the so-called World Wide Web, the interweb, you know, was designed by DARPA.
Yeah.
The Defense Advanced Research Project.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the guys realized when they put it together what it was going to do. Because when you got the web going out there, you know, you've got the internet, you can't lie to people anymore, for God's sake.
Not for long, you can't. You sure can't.
Well, you can pull it off for a little while, but you ain't going to get away with it very long.
That's right.
The other thing that I found incredibly fascinating is I've learned to do some rather serious remote viewing. And let me tell you, Kevin, when you start doing some real remote viewing like our military guys developed over the years, there are no secrets. They
mm-hmm.
can't keep anything from you, for God's sake.
All right.
You have the capability yourselves to extend your consciousness and go out and find the answers to these things. And once you've done that, and once you've looked back on this little tiny planet, and who we are and how we came to be, You change so completely. I mean, I feel like Robert Monroe. He was one of my heroes. He developed the Monroe Institute there in Pauper, Virginia, a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught how you can do that. He taught our military guys how to remote view. And Kevin, when you extend your consciousness out of your body, out into the universe, and you realize that you're a child of the universe, that there is in no limits, none whatever. That changes everything, my man.
That's a game changer for sure. All right, I want to invite the audience to join us. And folks, if you have a question or a comment, you just want to join the conversation, you can do that. And you do it by giving us a telephone call. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Now, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we know it can be a little expensive to make that international long-distance call, so we have a flash message option for you on my website. Just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. Okay? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, Bob, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Bob, I'm going to make a few comments. I'm going to ask you to comment on them. It's the powers that want to be right now have brainwashed themselves into what we call the old paradigm. They can't let go of it because it's the way they live. For those of us who are call them what they are, the wannabes, it's a spiritual journey. And as soon as we realize that, it'll be a lot easier for us. However, between now and then, we're going to have to deal with a lot of patience because there's going to be a lot of garbage coming at us, and it's going to be a rocky ride. And
okay, well, let's see what Bob has to say about that.
Okay.
Well, Kevin, Brad hits it right on the head. I hope I got his name right.
Yeah, Brent.
Brad is right on. He's nailed it to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
The old powers that be are in the old paradigm, and they're scared to death. They see the walls crumbling around them, and they don't quite know how to deal with it. And they're scared, literally. They're scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't change anything, because this expansion of human awareness and human consciousness is inevitable. It's going to happen. It's going to set us free, Brad, and you've nailed it right on, my friend, and I appreciate your comment.
Now, I have one question for you, Bob. One of the last interviews you did back in January or February, you were starting to go into what I would call the big picture. If Kevin will let you do this and somebody else doesn't call in, could you please expand on that? What is your view of the big picture?
Oh my God. How much time we have, Kevin?
Well, thank you, Brent. Yeah, go ahead.
Try to be brief, and it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
The big picture, in my view, is simply this, that the human race on the planet Earth is part of an infinite universe filled with intelligent life. I mean, we're talking about infinite life forms. We're talking about millions of planets with advanced intelligence. We are part of a community, Brad, that is everlasting. We are part of a community. Our little planet in this tiny little solar system, on the edge of this particularly, not particularly large galaxy, is simply part of a universe filled with so damn much intelligence and life. I learned from some of the remote viewing friends I have, and my own remote viewing, is that there is what we know of, or what we would think of as a galactic federation. You get back to the old Star Trek programs and you hear about the so-called galactic federation. Well, apparently something to that effect really does exist. There is a federation of advanced intelligence in the galaxy, but the headquarters for that particular organization is not even in our galaxy, for God's sake. The closest I could come to it is probably in Andromeda, which is one of our close neighboring galaxies, but there is an intergalactic organization of advanced intelligence, and they are monitoring us. They are watching, and they're encouraging it, and they're watching and encouraging and helping us evolve and grow and develop into what we are supposed to be. And as I've been told by some of my friends from out there, the human race has a future in the stars. And that's to me is the big picture. And I find it encouraging. I find it most gratifying.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone.
Thank you for your question, Brad.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
My question is, can you talk about the assessment that you read while working for NATO, and did you see alien bodies, autopsies, or et cetera, in that study?
Well, thank you for the question, but, you know, I was at NATO from 1963 to 1967. I worked at the SHAVE headquarters in Paris, France at that time, and I had a cosmic top secret clearance. And when they published the assessment in 64, I was working in the war room and I had access to it. And it changed my life. It literally was the one thing that changed my whole direction in my research and my investigations and all. No, I did not see any bodies, but I did see the autopsy reports. The assessment included 10 separate, how do I describe it? They were annexes and appendices. And in that 10 annexes and appendices, there was an annex on autopsies. And I had seen the autopsy reports and looked at the photographs because apparently there was a crash of a UFO outside of a little town in northern Germany in 1964 by the name of Timmensdorfer Strand. And this big 30-meter disc went into the ground, and the British Engineer Battalion responded to it, because in those days northern Germany was under British control. And I saw the autopsy reports of the retrieval of 12 little bodies out of that disc. And what interested me in the autopsy reports, and I have had the verification of it since, is that every one of these little dudes was identical, absolutely identical. And they did not have a respiratory, well, they did have, they had a respiratory capability, but they did not have a reproduction capability. They did not have an alimentary tract. And the autopsy reports concluded that they seemed to be cut from the same pattern. They were all absolutely identical. So the conclusion was, back in 1964, is that they were probably what we would call, biological androids, I guess, is the closest you could come to it. But I never saw the bodies myself. I did see the autopsy reports from the Timmensdorfer Strand crash in 64.
Okay.
And, that kind of changed my life, because it dawned on me that... my God, we're dealing with technology that's so far beyond us that we couldn't even grasp. I hope that answers your question.
I think you covered that quite well. You know, one of the comments that I see from time to time, either in an email or in one of our forum posts or wherever, is where someone talks about extraterrestrials, and they will say, well, so-and-so said that he's had contact with extraterrestrials, but they look just like us, and, you know, that's boring, or that's, I don't think that would be the case, that they wouldn't look like us. Well, you know, even on this planet, we notice variations in people. From person to person, they, you know, we don't all look alike. Extraterrestrials would not all look alike, and there are some that may be these biological androids, and there are some that may be human, but way beyond human. And out there somewhere, scattered through the universe, there may be planets where there are humans that are behind us in development. What do you think about that, Bob?
Well, I've been flatly told that, Kevin, that we are about, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're about 5.
Mm-hmm.
that there are intelligences and there are civilizations and there are life forms out there that are not as far evolved or advanced as we are. But we're somewhere out in the middle right now, which is why we're going through this transition into a new species. But there are, a dozen levels above us, for God's sake. And I'll tell you something else that I found fascinating, is, and they laid it on me pretty clearly, that the humanoid form, you know, the biped humanoid, is a pretty standard pattern throughout the universe. Now, there are variations, of course. There are life forms out there that are humanoid, but they are not human. And they look generally like us in a biped humanoid form. You know, they have two arms, two legs, two eyes, and so on. But they're certainly not human in any sense. They are evolved from different forms, and they are in different levels of development.
Mm-hmm.
But there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of human-like creatures out there, just like us, that are incredibly advanced beyond us, but in the physical form, in the humanoid form. Some of them can walk in our midst, and some of them do, and we'd never know it. That's the thing that when the assessment was finally published in 64, that drove the generals and the admirals up the wall when they were concluding that there were life forms in our presence that could walk in the midst of us up and down the halls of SHAPE headquarters, for God's sake. They could walk up and down the halls of the Pentagon, for God's sake. They could sit next to you in a restaurant or in the theater and you'd never know.
I guess they could even run for president.
Sorry? What?
I guess they could even run for president, couldn't they?
Oh, God, don't even go there.
No, seriously, I mean, you would never...
Because I think if they were in the higher levels of our government, we'd probably be a lot more efficient than we are. Kevin, these guys are so far beyond us in terms of evolution and in development and understanding that they are almost, well, ancestors, you know, our ancestors deified them, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
I got a question for the general. Have we been genetically engineered? Is there any race out there that lays claim to us?
Well, that's a hell of a good question, my man. You really hit the nail on the head, as it were. Yes, there is one particular race that we're dealing with today that we have a relationship with, that literally, apparently, did have a hand in genetically manipulating our genome a couple hundred thousand years ago. They created human, what is it, the Homo sapiens, what we called it, the old Cro-Magnon. And then about 50,000 years ago, they interjected again and manipulated the genome and created what we call Homo sapiens sapiens, which is what we consider to be ourselves, our modern man. Oh yes, our genome has been manipulated several times over the centuries, over the millennium, and that we are hybrids. The human race is a hybrid race. But what I find so exciting is that we have hybrids walking in our midst. And that to me is that those two guys, the two people who came up to me in the conference in Laughlin, Nevada 5 years ago, I considered them to be hybrids.
Well, who is the race that did all of this intervention?
Except when I looked into their eyes, I could tell that there was a hell of a lot more understanding in there that I would ever get from looking into the eyes of another human being.
Robert, what's the name of the race that did this manipulation?
I'm sorry, come again, please.
What is the name of the extraterrestrial race that did this manipulation?
tell you something, Kevin, that's kind of hard to pin down.
Okay.
I use the term Anunnaki, and I use that in a generic sense. Anunnaki is simply an old Sumerian term for those who from heaven above came to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Those who came down from above. And there are at least four different groups that I would put into that generic term of Anunnaki.
Okay, we have to step away for break. So let's hold up right there, and when we come back, I'll ask you about those four groups that you put into the generic term of Anunnaki. And Terry, do you want to hang on through the break?
No, I'll let you carry on, Kev. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, as we went away for break, you had mentioned there are four different groups that you put into the category, the generic term of Anunnaki. You want to expound on that just a moment?
Well, the ones that I've met personally, Kevin, is that, you know, there are two that look so much like us that they can walk in your midst and you'd never know it. And let me tell you something, they do. They walk in our midst. They're all over the damn place. There are four major extraterrestrial facilities on planet Earth. And out of the four that are coming and going, that are in relationship with us, two of them look totally human. Now, a couple of the others don't look completely human, because if they walked in your midst, you'd turn around and do a double take.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them don't have any hair, Kevin, no hair at all. And their eyes are generally a lot larger than the average human life, or the human eye.
Mm-hmm.
But, Kevin, there are infinite forms of life in the universe, literally. There are insect-type forms out there that are intelligent and incredibly advanced. And there are, you've heard the story again and again and again, but there are some that are kind of reptilian in their origin. But out of the four that are currently working with us, and the four that are currently interrelated with us, two of them are so completely human in terms of appearance that you would never know the difference. They generally tend to be rather tall. The original group that created us, that manipulated our genome, there are four different levels of them in their own world. These guys are masters of genetics, Kevin. They literally have mastered the art of the genome to the point that they can literally create the kind of form that they want. And they've done that to themselves over the millennium of time, in that they are literally almost perfect human specimens. They don't age, they don't get sick, and they tend to live incredibly long periods of time. And that's another thing that's quite disturbing to some of our shadow government people, that some of these guys that we're dealing with are 400, 500, 600 years old. Some of them probably are 1,000 years old, because they've manipulated their own genome to the point that they're practically perfect. They have eliminated all of the mistakes. And this is another one of the most difficult subjects to bring up and even talk about. They practice, oh God, how do I say it? They practice, they eliminate the imperfect in their own species.
Mm-hmm. Euthanasia.
What they end up as a final product is almost literally perfect. I run into a couple of them face to face.
All right, let's go to the telephone.
I run into the nobles.
Mm-hmm.
There is a nobility in their group. And their nobles, Kevin, are about 8-9 feet tall. And if you were to run into one of them on the street, you would do a double take, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Gary in Nebraska.
Hello, Gary.
I think, first of all, Bob Dean, please accept my gratitude and thanks for your service to our country. What I'd like to ask you to do is, those of us who are aware of our potential as humans, perhaps we could do with a couple of suggestions from your viewpoint to help us advance this business of getting closer, more knowledgeable and aware of those off-Earth people. How can we connect with them from your perspective?
Well, that's a good question, and I really don't know that I have an appropriate answer for you here. All I can do is tell you what happened in my own life. I became a recluse in 2003. Are you still there? Am I coming through?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay, about 2003, Kevin, I became a recluse. I made a presentation at the Bay Area Conference in San Francisco, and I stood up and I said, you know, I'm out of here. I'm finished. I've had it. I'm not going to do this anymore. I was fed up with the rock throwing, the mud slinging, all of that crap. And that was primarily within the so-called UFO community itself.
Yeah.
And I said, I've had enough of this, and I'm out of this. And I went back to Phoenix. I came home here. And I became a recluse for 5 years. And during those 5 years, Kevin, I did a lot of introspection, reflection, meditation, started doing some severe remote viewing. And it was when I began that process that things began to open up in my mind and open up in my consciousness, and those guys began to drop in on me and picked me up and took me aboard the ships and began chatting with me, for God's sake. So the only clue I can possibly give you is, try if you can to get out of this average day-by-day knock-down, drag-out ball that most human beings on planet Earth look upon as reality. And I reflected, I became introspective, I began doing some severe meditation, and when I got into some severe remote viewing, that's when they popped in. And that's when they began to talk to me face to face and come into my life, as it were. I'll be honest with you, this is not an easy process to go through. I may have told Kevin this before. I went through three stages in my life. First stage, stage one, was I thought I was losing my mind. And stage two was I became convinced I had lost my mind. Now I'm in stage three. And I'm comfortable in stage three. Because in stage three, I'm sane and the rest of the world is nuts. And I find that to be a comfortable place to be, because I'm dealing with the reality of ultra-reality, as it were, and life beyond the planet and life within the universe. And that's only a thing that happened to me, is that I began to meditate, I began to reflect, I began to do some severe remote viewing, and that's when they began popping into my life in a big way. So I don't know whether that'll work for you, but it's the only thing I can give you in the way of giving it a try.
Well, thank you for that suggestion. I will see what I can do personally on that level. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Let me tell you something, my friend. You are capable of things you wouldn't believe you're capable of. They told me that the human race is a unique and special breed. We are unique. And each and every one of us has the ability to go beyond and reach out and extend our consciousness, because we are essentially infinite and immortal life forms. we tended to call it the human soul, but it is a reality. And when this, when you've used up this body that you're in at the moment, you walked around on the planet for 50, 60, 80 or years or whatever, when the body begins to fall apart and begins to age and break down, that's no, nothing to worry about, because that is a natural process. And when the body dies, you don't die. Bear in mind that something that you must understand beyond a doubt, that you are an infinite and immortal being. And once you come to terms with that, as Yogananda used to say, once you reach that self-realization, then you understand who you really are. And that's the answer. That's the answer to everything.
All right, we have a flash message from Leonardo in Puerto Rico, and he says that the question he has for you is, who and what are the Archons?
Oh boy, that's a good question. You've got some pretty sharp people on this audience.
Okay. Yeah, we do.
Well, Archon is an ancient term. It's used on the planet. It's been used for centuries, but it's been misused a lot. The Archons are the more advanced intelligences out there. I call them transcendentals. There are life forms. There is a hierarchy out there. As I said to you earlier, the human race is about 0.5 on a scale of 1 to 10. But there are intelligences and cultures and civilizations and life forms out there that are so far beyond us that they have transcended physical form. And they're at the very top of the hierarchy. Now, these are the guys that are literally in control. Our ancestors would have called them angels. Our ancestors would have called them gods. But they are a life form that has evolved over millions of years, and they are so far advanced beyond us that they are predominantly spiritual in nature. Now, they can incarnate, they can become material life forms if they choose. But many of them have transcended that. And that's why I call them transcendentals. I've run into a few of them, and they appear to me as shimmering beings of golden light. And those are the ones I would call the Archons, because they're the ones that I think that are overall in control of the universe, probably in the service of God.
All right. We have another flash message, this one from Andrew in Australia. And he would like to know if you could give a description, when you talked about being taken aboard the ships, how big are the ships, and can you give us a description of what it's like, what it looks like inside?
Well, I'll do what I can. You know, I've been aboard several times. They've taken me aboard, and the last time they took me with them, I was with them for 6 weeks, Kevin, literally. They took me out of my bed in the middle of the night and took me aboard a ship, and I find myself sitting in what I consider a luxurious lounge. The kind of lounge you'd find in a 5-star hotel. And these two guys walked over to me, and they were very, very tall. They were, 6.5, 7 feet. And he says, "We want you to come with us. And we have things to show you, and we have things to tell you that we think it's important that you should know." Well, Kevin, I didn't get the impression that there was a choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am sitting in the middle of a luxurious lounge aboard what I thought was a ship. And they proceeded to take me, and in about 15 minutes, we were where we were supposed to be, and I found myself in another world. Now, you know, I told you I went through these three stages, and I thought, I'm losing my mind. But I found myself spending 6 weeks with them in another world, And they fed me, and they answered my questions, and oh, I drove them crazy.
Okay, we're going to get the rest of that answer when we come back from this break. But we were talking about what it's like on board these ships. Andrew from Australia would like to know what it looks like in there. This lounge that you were in, is that the only part of the ships that you've seen?
Well, no, I've been to the bridge a couple of times.
What does that look like?
Let me tell you something, Kevin. These ships are absolutely gigantic. In my presentations over the years, I've shown some photographs that I took, that I got from the Japanese Space Agency, that were taken by Apollo 13 on their way to the moon. And there's a photograph taken by Apollo 13. There are two photographs in sequence on the way to the moon where they encountered ships apparently were 5 miles long. And a couple of the disks with domes appeared to be, you know, a mile in diameter. And our remote viewers have discovered that there is an object on the other side of the moon that's 25 miles in diameter.
Really?
So I've been aboard ships several times, but I never was given a complete tour. I was shown the bridge in one case, which was a shocking experience, because you can't believe what the universe looks like when you're out there in space. And the other time, when they took me for 6 weeks, I ended up in a lounge, a luxurious lounge, big comfortable chair, and they came in and told me that we want you to come with us because we want to show you and tell you some things that we think you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, Kevin, I got the impression from them that what they were showing me and what they were telling me, they wanted me to share with other people. They wanted me to share it, which is why, apparently, I came back from death in October. I'm supposed to do what I'm doing, Kevin. I'm supposed to be telling people what I've seen, what I've learned, and what I've been told. But, you know, I've never been given a complete tour of a ship because my time was brief. I went through a couple of medical exams. I was with a whole bunch of human beings, stark-ass naked, and we were all in this big room. And we were all naked as the day we were born, and we were being told to get up on these tables, and each and every one of us were given, from what it appeared to me, the medical exams.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's happened to me several times. I have a good friend who's a retired dentist from Sedona who told me that he and his wife had been taken aboard one time, and they were looking over to the side, and they saw me standing on the edge of this room wearing a long white bathrobe or something, and I'm talking to these two tall dudes. These guys are well over 6 feet. And I don't have a clue to that memory. That memory has escaped me completely.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Cave and his wife were both abducted and taken aboard this ship, and they said they saw me there. But you know, Kevin, I don't remember anything about that particular incident. But I've been aboard several times, and they've shown me around a little bit. I was taken to the bridge once, and that was a shock. You can't believe what the universe looks like when you're out in space.
Was the bridge highly technological, or was it pretty devoid of technology?
No, it was filled with technology. There were consoles filled with electronic devices of one kind or another, all kinds of lights going off and on. And there were a bunch of guys sitting at these desks, at these consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, you know, doing whatever it is they're supposed to do. But these ships are gigantic, Kevin. They literally are. I mean, Voyager 1 in 1979 and 80 took pictures in the rings of Saturn of artificially constructed electromagnetic vehicles. That's what NASA called them. And Norman Bergeron, in his incredible book, The Ringmakers of Saturn, published some of those pictures that were taken by Voyager 1. And there's an object in the orbit of Saturn that is about the size of our moon. It's artificial, it's self-luminous, and it's about the size of our moon. And of course, our moon is 2,160 miles in diameter.
That's a pretty big vehicle, isn't
it? All over the damn place, Kevin. They're everywhere out there. And our NASA people know it. Our secret government people, the shadow government people know it. And they don't know how to tell the average American that we're confronting with a Type II civilization out there that can literally construct and place in orbit objects of that size. And here we are, you know, we send a little shuttle up, and we send the Apollo capsules up. Well, three guys crammed in there, you know, and good God.
Well, are you...
5 miles long ships the size of our moon.
Are you pretty confident that we're going...
That literally, according to Michio Kaku, are about type two civilizations, and that's the thing that we don't know how to tell the average person.
Are you pretty sure that we are going to join this Type II civilization within the next 100 years or so?
Well, Kevin, at the moment, we're Type 00.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the capability, I think, of becoming a Type 1 civilization if we just get the information, the scientific knowledge we've got. If we could apply it and use it for the people's benefit. You know, we could eliminate the oil industry in a minute. We could eliminate the gas industry in a minute. But that would cause, you know, Holocaust. That would cause an economic crash. Yeah, I know that we're going out there, Kevin. We're going. I've been told we're going. And we're going to take our rightful place out there. We're going to the stars. I mean, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to the stars. And I've been shown the future, and the future is absolutely glorious, Kevin. I wish I would... I'd like to stress that again and again to anyone who's listening. For God's sake, stop being afraid. There is a future for the human species. We are a work in progress, but we're going to make it.
Well, again, I'm absolutely delighted that you brought that message to the audience tonight. You know, I have guests that bring the other message. I sometimes am a lone voice in the wilderness telling people, you know what? The future's happening one nanosecond at a time. And in the time that I've been talking, many nanoseconds have hit us, and they were future. And it didn't kill us. And, you know, there's no reason to be afraid.
Reality, Kevin, is unfolding whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I find, very gratifying.
Well, there are lots and lots and lots of people who prefer to be scared. They want to have the living hell scared out of them, or they think it was not a good show. And you know, they just feed on a steady diet of those kinds of shows all over the internet and all over radio that just scare them and scare them and scare them.
I'm so fed up with the doomsday sayers, Kevin. My God, we've had them with us for the last 1,000 years.
Yeah. Well, and neither you or me, neither one of us is saying to the people,
places, and there is a future for the human species. And as I've said, that future for the human race is in the stars.
Yeah, and neither one of us is saying that there won't be tough times. Neither one of us is saying there won't be calamities. There will be. But there were when I was 4 years old, too. And there were calamities long before I was born. And, you know, we're going to make it, folks. We are going to make it. Robert, we have run out of time. Thanks for being with me. And if you will, just stay on the telephone with me for a minute as I bring the show in for a landing, because we are racing towards the end of the show as if it were a brick wall at the end of the road. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this evening. I want to thank Robert Dean for being with us, and I want to thank you for being with us. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time.